KRVN.
Good afternoon and welcome to the channel Final Bell on the Rural Radio Network. I'm Susan Littlefield. It is a Wednesday, and I tell you, it's glad to have Arlen back with us once again as he's been on the road traveling, and a perfect time for him to come back on this show because we're going to talk about the stimulus that's going on with China. Soybeans over $12. What's going on with the Safrinha corn crop? And most importantly, what everybody's talking about today, the feds. As I mentioned, Arlen Suderman is joining us with StoneX, and I think, Arlen, we need to start there. Let's talk about these Fed talks. And I mean, 1 o'clock came and the news was all abuzz about what was and wasn't going to happen.
I think it's key that this Fed meeting came after the twice annual, so what you call that, biannual testimony before Congress that Chair Jerome Powell makes. Or he testifies first to the House Financial Services Committee on one day, and the next day the Senate Banking Committee. And he just got pummeled with lawmakers pushing him to cut rates. That just sells well with constituents. That may or may not be the right thing for the economy, depending on what's going on at the time. Lawmakers really don't know that or understand that or care about that. They care about what the constituents want. And of course, we'd all like to have everything for free, right? That's not always what's healthiest. The expectation coming into this report was that we would see the Fed dialing back its language about rate cuts, because it introduced the concept of possible rate cuts this year in their December meeting, saying it felt like at some point in 2024, the conditions would be right for cutting rates. And their dot plot graphic, where all the members put down on a chart where they think rates will be by the end of the year, indicated that they kind of thought, like, you know, it'll probably be about 3 rate cuts this year, or 75 basis points. Well, immediately consumer sentiment surged. Wall Street surged to record highs for the major stock indices. And we therefore, with the push in the economy, saw hotter than expected inflation numbers in each of the next 3 months, going against what the Fed needed to see actually happen, going against what they're trying to do. And so the expectation was that they would dial that language back this time around in order to try to contain consumer sentiment and Wall Street and euphoria, so that the economy actually would slow down enough to get inflation down to the 2% level. He didn't do that. Instead, they said, you know, we think inflation at the end of the year is going to be a little higher than what we previously thought. We think the economy is going to be a little stronger than we previously thought, but we're still probably going to be cutting rates by about 3 times this year, at some point later this year. All that does, we've seen stocks rally since that announcement was made. We'll see consumer sentiment likely follow it higher as well. And all that does is help ensure that what I've been saying for the last 4 or 5 months is I expect inflation to come back by the second quarter of this year. And it just continues to fuel my expectations that we will see that happen. Now, initially, I anticipate this to be negative for commodities, although we probably have enough other factors going on. The funds already have big short or sold positions in the commodities. That is probably not going to make that much difference. In fact, the funds are getting nervous about having such large short positions as we go into the time of year when weather risks in major producing parts of the world are going higher. And we also have elevated geopolitical risks. So that's why we've been seeing some fund short covering in recent days and over the last week or two. So that'll probably still be the primary story. Longer term, if we follow the pattern of history, if the fund managers do start becoming more concerned about inflation, and we are seeing like the 2-year break even inflation rate, which is what the market thinks inflation or average over the next 2 years, the same thing with the 5-year, those have been turning higher of late. And if we continue to see that trend, history tells us within another 2 to 3 months, we see the funds getting uncomfortable with being short the commodities, desiring rather to be long the commodities. And that does change the level at which the market manages supply and demand. So that's what I'm watching for. And Jerome Powell and the Federal Reserve just really fed into that scenario and kept it alive today.
Definitely made for some interesting marketings, and I think a lot of anticipation of what would be said. I think the markets kind of played with that. Having said that, what are we going to see overnight? And are we going to still see a bit of reaction as we head into tomorrow's day trade?
Yeah, and a lot of it hinges on how we continue to finish this trading day based on the press conference that's still going on with Fed Chair Jerome Powell as we speak, and if he says anything that shocks the market. But if it continues the way it is, which is generally a positive response, then I think the commodity markets probably stick to what they've been doing, and that's basically consolidating in a range, waiting for next week's reports. Those reports are known for their surprises. That's USDA's quarterly stocks reports and their planning intentions reports, while monitoring the weather in South America as well as the Midwest for the planting season. And we can talk more about both of those. Both of those have the potential for some story development. But I think getting past next week Thursday's reports is going to be the next step for these markets, and then we'll take a look at what's happening with the winter corn crop or safrinha corn crop in Brazil and the spring planting season here in the United States. And I think those are the primary factors that'll be setting the tone as we go forward in the weeks ahead.
All right, well, stick around, folks. We got a lot to pack into the second half. You're not going to want to miss it. As we continue to have this conversation this afternoon with Arlen Suderman, we'll talk about what's going on with the safrinha corn crop. We know that there's some heavy snow and or moisture in the form of rain that's going to hit many parts of the Midwest, who definitely will welcome that ahead of the spring planting. But we'll also take a look at the soybeans as well, hitting over that $12 mark and holding there throughout the rest of today's trading session. It's the Channel Final Bell right here on the Rural Radio Network.
Joe Gangwish back with you for Channel Seed. Steve Bristol of Bristol Ag is our guest on this channel chat. Steve serves the central Nebraska area out of Ravenna. So Steve, what's been the most rewarding part of being a Channel Seed pro?
You know, being able to solve problems for guys. Lots of times I have growers come to me with all kinds of issues that they face on their farm, and I utilize my local and practical trials and experience to create solutions that fit the individual farm needs.
What are the advantages of channel and regional brands coming together?
You know, we have the best and most complete seed portfolio in the corn and soybean industry, and it just got better. No seed company has a hybrid built specifically for each field's individual demands other than channel.
For more on what channel can do for you, see Steve at Bristol Ag in Ravenna. You can also find Bristol Ag and channel on Facebook or contact your local channel seed professional in Nebraska, Kansas, Wyoming, or Colorado.
KRVM.
Welcome back to the Channel Final Bell on the Rural Radio Network. I'm Susan Littlefield. As our conversation continues with Arlen Suderman, we got a lot to cover in this second half. So I think you'd mentioned it before we went to break. Let's talk about the safrinha corn crop and what concerns and risks are you seeing right now?
Right now, the crop is doing fine. It's been dry, and you'll see that on social media. In fact, if you look back over the last 40, 45 years, and you look at rainfall since February 1st, it's been one of the driest on record, no doubt about it. But the rains have been timely enough that the crop's overall doing okay. But the critical time comes from this point forward without much of a soil reserve, and in the month of April is when we go through pollination. So what will the weather be there? You'll hear a lot of talk about it being hot. As I've looked at daytime temperatures, it's not that much different than what we encounter in July here in the Midwest, maybe even a little bit better. But what concerns me is nighttime temperatures. Now, over the next week, we're going to get some good rains over much of the winter corn belt, of the safrinha corn belt, if you will. But then after that, it looks like it might shut off. And if we look at similar years when we saw that happen, there's not a lot of them, so our confidence is low in this. But one of them we're looking at is 2016, another is 2010. But I really like the 2016 comparison. If we go back dry in April like we did in 2016, we saw like a 20 to 25% reduction in yield. That would mean taking basically 800 million bushels off of the crop if we were to see that happen again this year. And that would be big news. That probably would be expected to have a significantly better impact on our balance sheet here in the United States with higher exports if that were to happen. So a lot of ifs, ands, and buts in there, but that's what we're keeping our eyes on going forward.
Now, there's a lot of shifting in the weather models, but no matter how you look at it, we're going to get moisture, whether it comes in the form of that white stuff, frozen stuff of ice or rain. Some good things that we need as we move into this spring planting.
Yeah, the Midwest, let's face it, has some dry soils yet, especially central and eastern Midwest, and even parts of the western plains, very dry soil profiles, just not there. We hate to go into spring planting with that. The good news is it looks like with increasing confidence now that over the next several weeks, we're going to be shifting that pattern into a much wetter pattern, starting with this weekend, really, the end of this week, and going forward over the next several weeks. And we're going to be introducing quite a bit more moisture to help fill that soil profile ahead of planting season.
What about the, and you and I haven't talked in a while, the March 8th crop report. How is that being set up right now for the soybeans?
Yeah, you know, that crop report was seen as pretty neutral, kind of a non-event. But when I dug down in numbers, I thought there were some things that were pretty significant. There's been a lot of questions why USDA hasn't dropped its soybean production estimate more in Brazil. And we've been talking about maybe the area is larger than what we anticipated. Much of the soybeans have grown in that vast backcountry of Brazil. They've raised last year's crop by 5 million metric tons over the last few months. That's a pattern they've been having in recent years. So they estimate the size of the crop and what demand is, and then they always end up using more demand, which they can measure, than what they thought they had, and they still have soybeans left over, and so they're upgrading the previous year. That seems to fit that scenario, and maybe USDA is getting a handle on that. The other thing is what they've done with China. They bumped up last year's soybean import number for China to 104 million metric tons. That's up better than 3 million metric tons in the previous month, even though the previous month's number was closer to U.S. or to Chinese customs data. Then they went on to raise this year's import estimate by 3 million metric tons to 105 million metric tons, while leaving crush unchanged at 98 million metric tons, up just 2 million metric tons from the previous year. That puts projected ending stocks for China for this current marketing year at 37.58 million metric tons, up 49% or almost 50% over the last 2 years, confirming what I've been saying about China building its reserves. Now, if verified, that would mean that China will have added 457 million bushels to its soybean reserves over the last 2 years, bringing them to 1.38 billion bushels, are enough to avoid having to import any soybeans from the United States if they get into a conflict with us. Simultaneously, about 10 days ago, they finished their policy meeting they have every year. They usually follow the press conference, none this year. They changed the wording on Taiwan, removing the words peaceful reunification of Taiwan and put in language that was more aggressive in firmly moving forward with reunifying Taiwan.
Interesting, Arlen. Very much so. It'll be fun to watch and see where this all develops. What's the best way for folks to get a hold of you?
StoneX.com or direct message me on X, formerly Twitter. My handle is Arlen, ARLANFF101.
And that has been today's Channel Final Bell, being brought to you by the Channel Seed and your local Channel Seed professional. Then, of course, you can check this as a podcast at ruralradionetwork.com. It's a Channel Final Bell on the Rural Radio Network.